Worst things that happen at sea. Oh, I got a sinking feeling about this one. Next on R. Sinclair. Hey everyone, welcome to a sink or swim edition of R. Sinclair. I'm excited about this one. Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm the captain of this ship. I'm your captain, Amigo Aaron, joined by my first mate. I give you our personal Gilligan, a.k.a. the Brent.
Ghost, old scumbag.
What is that?
Oh, no.
I said first mate, not of ancient miner.
You said Gilligan.
Gilligan?
He was all woo-hoo.
That's you. You're a dumb, you're a red shirt and a dumb hat away.
Wait a minute.
Made me the skipper. We're glad to see everyone here for this special Christmas edition.
Except you.
Of R. Sinclair.
You know who you are.
Please don't badmouth the one guy.
Sorry.
That's right. Christmas is just around the corner. And what better way to celebrate Christmas than pulling out your ZX Spectrum or any of the myriad models of the ZX and sitting down and playing a game where you repeatedly sink a cargo ship in between the straits.
Being a complete ecological disaster as you dump booze and oil throughout the entire sea.
Possibly porn. We're not sure. Now, before we get to the game, I want to talk a little bit about this game has ramifications that are being felt currently. And the ramifications are this. This is when humans take a step too far in the future. All right. So think about this for a minute. This game, the point of the game is, we've got robotic ships, cargo ships that are going back and forth across the ocean, manned completely by robots, everything running on limited power with modern batteries. Now, does this sound like a bad idea? It is. This reminds me of our actual situation with our current cars. And surely we don't have robot ships that do this. Does this exist in the real world?
Yes. Yes.
Really? Unmanned robot cars?
Yeah, in fact, and a lot of things. Just like landing a plane,
yeah,
a lot of that stuff is automated. I mean, yeah, there's still humans at the controls.
I mean, there's a human there.
Oh yeah. I mean, here's the thing, Aaron. If they wouldn't have cheaped out and put more than one robot on the ship, well, I guess technically they have three robots, but only one active at a time. This thing would have went off without a hitch.
Can you imagine? I mean, I don't want to be on a plane where they're like, listen, we're cutting it down to the wire on this trip. And by the way, it's completely automated. Here comes the robot stewardess, and the robot's also driving the plane.
I'm okay with that.
Are you nuts?
Yeah.
Have you seen what happens to this ship?
Yeah. No, yeah. And it's at your fault.
Yeah, but think of the same people made the plane that make the boat. Well, this thing's a piece of garbage.
That doesn't have anything to do with the robot. The robot's out there trying his best. It's not like a human would have done any better.
I think it's got a lot to do with the robot, because the robot has a wind-up motor, basically. It can't do anything for it to recharge the robot. Well, how long do you think in the future, how long is it going to be before modern man can get to the point where everything is battery operated and robo-sized? Like, give me a prediction.
It won't be in our lifetime.
In your lifetime?
Yes.
Because I'm going to live for a while.
Well, sorry. Yeah, if anyone didn't know, I'm dying next week.
See, when people use the phrase, in your lifetime, they don't know how long I'm going to live.
Well, that means
we're that close.
In the next 50 years.
I'm just saying, we're that close to breaking the barrier of death. I'm that close personally. I've been working on it, you know?
Anyway, no, I don't think we'll see it in the next 50 years. I mean, complete automation, but it will happen. And I think it'll be great. But a lot of people won't take advantage of the freedom that such a world would present them. And I'm sure the governments will screw it up anyway.
Now, let me ask you a question here. This is sort of along the same lines. Robotic cars.
Yeah.
Right? We got them.
Yeah.
They're driving around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, let's say they're like, here, Brent, here's the robotic car. It's going to drive you from Hurricane down to, like, I don't know, Huntington.
Okay.
Okay. Are you down?
Yes.
You're going to let this robot car drive you through all that construction?
100%.
What about all the other crazy drivers that are out there? Can a robot react in time to save you?
I mean, if it is functioning properly, which you have to assume it is.
But why do you assume that?
Aaron, I could go out there and have a stroke. I mean, the same probability is there. In theory, if everything's working properly, it should have a far greater reaction time than I could ever have.
Right.
So.
I'm just saying, there's no way I would get in the backseat of a car and tell a robot to drive me somewhere in this area. I'd be dead a million times because I drive all the time. It's not just like, oh, you just drive between the lines. There's like 400 tons of ever-evolving construction between here and Huntington. Yep. There's maniac drivers. They're all jacked up on goofballs. They're drunk, liquored up. They're behind the wheel.
What makes you think you're going to do better than a
human experience and intuition? The day that I will personally get in a robot car is the day a robot can show up at my house and walk up to my door and deliver my pizza and ask for no tip that I'm in. That's my personal breaking point. Until that, I don't mean airlift the pizza, any of that crap.
Why is that any different?
Because then I'll think they're there.
A robot driver is the most inefficient use of time and materials I could ever personally think of.
That's not the most inefficient.
I mean, for what you're asking it to do.
What do you mean by that?
If there was going to be a pizza delivery service, right, an automated pizza delivery service,
right,
a vehicle would drive to your, automatically drive to your home.
Right.
And then like a little like tank vehicle would get out.
Absolutely.
And bring it to your door. Is that acceptable?
I'd prefer one of those fancy robot carnival size, you know, styled hot robot chicks.
Yeah.
They can saunter up there.
I believe you do. I 100% believe you're being honest.
Yeah. What would I lie on
this
show? I mean,
stupid, but honest.
Just a minute. This is Carson Clare. All truths are told, my friend. With all that said, I think that was a pretty educated argument there.
If you have no idea how much stuff is already automated.
Like, give me an example.
They have trucks driving automated on the road right now.
Where?
Mostly in California.
Right, but that's crazy town. In West Virginia, if you can get them to drive up down these hills, you're doing something, brother.
Well, the issue with driving in West Virginia is there's so much hilly terrain, it's going to drain the batteries. You know, but, I mean, it's all doable. It's all possible.
You know, if I was designing these vehicles, right, you could just design a truck that just drives itself, right?
Yeah.
That's so lame.
Oh.
I like those kind of...
Okay.
I like the vehicles where you actually build a robotic, like, chauffeur guy, and he's part of the seat. You know, and he's got little arms. That's the kind of guy I would drive. That's what I want to see in my future. I want a wacky 70s future. That's what I'm looking for.
Well,
can you have one of those? Get that going for me.
I recommend a lot more drugs, man.
Let's move along from this riveting discussion about robotics and a dystopian-like future, which we're almost certainly going to. And let's talk about another dystopian future where robots drive leaky tankers across the ocean. Bam. Worse things happen at sea.
Yes.
Brent. Let's talk about this bad boy. You know, I'm not gonna lie. The name of this honed in the view, this is sort of a saying that you would hear. I hear it on TV shows from the UK occasionally, for example. Worst things happen at sea, you know, and also famously uttered.
I've never heard that saying before.
You never seen Life of Brian?
Oh, I mean, yes, I have.
That's part of the lyrics to always look on the bright side. It's a line in there. Worst things happen at sea, you know?
Eric Idle. Yeah, the talking part, yeah.
So, anyway, I'd heard this phrase before, but I thought to myself, this must be a fun, lighthearted shooter or boat game. It's neither of those things. I guess it's sort of a boat game. So, worst things happen at sea, a ZX exclusive. That means something. Released in 84, and it was developed by Mind's Eye Software.
Yes.
Mind's Eye didn't do anything else that they're credited for on the ZX. I think that Mind's Eye was a fellow named Jim Gardner and some other guys. And Jim Gardner, he did lots of other stuff. But I don't hold me to that because I'm outside of my element here. Published by Silversoft Limited, who did nothing we've played, but they did some games called Armageddon, Babalaba. I like that one.
Babalaba Ding Dong.
Board of the Rings. So I guess they like a parody game. Muncher. Orbiter, and many, many more games. This game was a 48K joint and went for the Princely sub-brand of £5.95.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that price. I would have thought cheap. I would have thought this would have been a full price game.
I agree. You could actually play, apparently, you could play two places. I never tried to do that, but that's what it's listed as.
Well, I'm sure it's just hot seat.
Yeah. And
I don't call that a two-player game. Well, that's just one player plays, and then the other person plays. That's
what, listen, don't kill the messenger, pal. So, what do you do? And there's, I will say, I read the docs. The backstory is nominal, okay? It basically, you are in charge of a robot vessel. It's a large cargo ship.
Yeah.
That's going from point A to point B across the ocean, various points, in fact, of length. And your job is to safely get this boat across the ocean. Sounds simple, right? Well, that's where they screw you. Because they get you the cheapest, crappiest boat they could find. It's like if they made a boat back here in the backyard, you know. And they're like, here we go, cargo ship. And by the way, this isn't like a tugboat. This isn't like a small boat. This is a boat with 11 areas, 6 on the top deck, and 5 areas below deck. Okay, yeah. So it's a double deck.
It's a huge boat.
All right. And each of these areas is joined by hatches that are in the walls or floor. Okay. So let's talk about, let's go across the basic premise of the game. The basic premise is you're in control of the fix-it robots, that they're custodial robots that come online to take care of any small, insignificant issues that the ship may have.
Wax the floors.
Unfortunately, these ships are garbage. They're crappy garbage.
They
never let us go in the sea. And the robots have to run hither and yon across the bow of the deck to try to patch holes and pump water out that this thing perpetually takes on, all while trying to protect the cargo. And, added bonus, the robot has a battery that's the same kind that's in your watch.
Yes.
The robots are super limited in how much they can do. And the limits of their battery are affected by how much water's in the ship, what maneuverings you do with the robots. So, like, if you're doing something particularly demanding, you're going to use your battery power faster.
Yes.
The ship, when your game starts up, it gives you a nice, it gives you the option of looking at the instructions. And when you look at the instructions, you'll think to yourself, I'm screwed.
I mean,
it seems harder than it is.
Yes.
How about that?
The instructions give you all the information at one time when really you only need to worry about it. It piecemeals its way up.
Right.
It gives you the information for everything, but it only starts you with one task.
Yeah. So let's talk about the actual look of the game. When the game, I'm just going to throw it to you for a minute. The game comes up, it gives you instructions, the game starts. Your thoughts on how the presentation was and whatnot.
Great. Beyond great. It does kind of cheese you out on a little bit of gaming real estate by having who it's written by at the very bottom.
Very little, though.
Right.
Yeah, that's as far as that goes, that's not that bad.
Well, but it's unnecessary. I mean, I get it. Mine's they want to be.
They had a tiny little bit of room. Why not put it in? Hey, it's your only game. Might as well build yourself. That's the way I look at it.
But the screen is almost broken in half. It's more like 2/5 and 3/5.
Yeah.
The upper 2/5 of the game has all your details. It has the boat's progress from point A to point B. It has how much power your robot still has in his battery pack. It has water levels. It has if you're on the correct course or not, the boat's temperature, how much time has passed, what item you're carrying, the value of the cargo on the boat, your bank account value, the highest bank account value, which I guess that technically doesn't need to be on the screen either, but it's fine. And then,
you know how much money you're losing every second.
And then it has a compartment layout of the boat showing how much water is in each compartment. And it is, and the location of your robot on the boat. It is visually pleasing. It is informative. It is exactly what you want from a GUI. And then down below that, it has your actual gameplay area. This is where the robot is running around and performing his tasks. And it is also brilliant.
Yeah.
It has little details that, like the piping structure that helps make up the background. There is zero color clash throughout the entire game. When you're in cargo halls, you see cargo. When you see things that you need to pick up, they're very obvious, the tasks that you need to do. If a door is open or closed, it's somewhat hard to tell, except it has a red light or a green light,
yeah,
just like you would have on an actual ship. The ceiling doors do. The floor doors, it's very obvious if they're open or not. It is a joy to look at.
It's one of the few games I've ever played on any machine where almost every bit of the game real estate is used cunningly.
Yeah.
Like, there are no...
Yeah, it's real close.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, it's not like... we've seen plenty of these games where two-thirds of the game is the game and one-third's like a huge thing that has the name of the game or something. All the information you're getting here, I mean, for the most part, at the bare minimum, it's interesting to know. At the maximum, it's necessary at all times to know.
Yes.
So, you have a staff of three robots that are tasked with keeping these ships floating as you go across the sea. As Brent mentioned, there's a graphic at the top that shows where you're at in the sea from one land mass to the other. And so your job is to keep this boat going out. Early on, you don't have to even fool with like the steering of the boat, but that comes into play later on, and the oiling of the engine and whatnot. So early on, your first task is going to be running by and picking up basically like the sealant, seal tiles to go and seal leaks in the bottom of the boat. There are tons
Take
of
big band-aids.
Yeah, they're sort of like, they look like, I thought like Lego pieces, but big metal ones.
Yeah.
So your robot can pick up a couple things, okay? They can pick up those metal tiles.
Yeah.
They can pick up levers you use to take the rooms to work the pump.
Yeah.
Some rooms don't have the lever you need. They can pick up oil as well.
Yes.
And you can take that up front and dump it. I can't remember the oil funnel, I believe that's what it's called.
The funnel,
As you go through the boat, but you have free reign. You can go all the way across it, which is going across like six screens to get to the other side. It takes a while. So what you can do in this is like a super step. When you set the controls up, and we'll get to the controls here in a second. But when you set the controls up, you've got a left, right, up, down. You've got a power button, basically. And then you've got sort of like an activation button.
Yeah.
The power button, when you go into the recharge area for your robot, you hit that button, it recharges your robot. It also will, I believe it also works the pump when you hit that. It also, if you hold down that power button and hit your left or right arrow keys, your guy will literally beam to the direct next screen over.
Teleport exactly one screen over without in your same location.
Without even opening the door.
Correct.
Now, that sounds great. It is great. But the downside is it uses more power for the battery.
Far more power.
So if you're zipping back and forth across the ship, you're okay, but you got to watch that the battery level because it will drain quickly. But you're going to have to use the super step. You have no choice because you can't. It's too slow otherwise. The robot sort of shuffles along, basically. The boat goes across and more leaks open. And when you look at the little chart, there's a little, as Brent mentioned, there's a little picture of the ship from the side with all the chambers. And you'll see they slowly start going from white to black or to blue. And that means that those chambers are filling with water.
Yeah.
Now, water doesn't affect your robot. He can go right through it, even if it's over his head.
Although
it screws his battery up, though. But, I mean, it does, because you'll have to get in the water to fix these leaks. And then once you've fixed all the leaks in the room, even if you haven't, you can still use the pump, but it's sort of pointless to pump water when there's more water coming in.
Right.
I've seen up to three leaks in a room.
I think that's the
I've never seen any more than three. Also, when you've fixed a room, that doesn't mean it's fixed forever. It'll start leaking again. And you have to go down there. And a lot of rooms have the little metal panels to fix them, but a lot don't.
Well, and a room might only have one, and you need two or three leaks.
Right, or a room might have only have one leak, and you have a panel, but there's no control arm for the pump. And so you're running back and forth manically trying to get this stuff. Now, on the earlier levels, this pretty much all you have to do is just keep track of this stuff. I failed over and over at this game until I did two things. And we're going to go ahead and talk about the controls right now. This is an older game, and the control options are not compatible. Well, this is one of those... Listen, we live in 2023 as we're filming this. And one of the problems with that is we're not playing this on an actual ZX Spectrum. And controls that were set up that where you can't rekey the game are set up differently for our modern keyboards today on the ZX. They make more sense. So the ZX gives you, they give you six built-in options for the controls, yeah. All right? None of them are any good for a modern PC emulated thing. So luckily, I was still trying to use these controls to play. This game requires too much pinpoint quickness to be muddling around with controls.
I found that option 4 was good enough.
I was using option 1. So here I went to option 7, Aaron option. So I was playing this on the Mister, but I stopped. I went to archive.org. I played it there. Why? Because I knew they had MAME to run all their machines. Little known trick. A lot of people don't know this. If you're playing these things in your browser at archive.org, you can hit the scroll break key and then hit the tab key. And what that'll do is it'll break you in to the MAME.
The actual emulator.
Yeah. And then I just set the keys from option 1 to be the arrow keys and a couple keys over here. Bam. That made a world of difference in terms of my ability to play this game. I don't fault the game for that. I would like to have had most games eventually got to the point where you'd let you program your own keys. This one, just as an older game, they weren't doing that as much back in those days. That's what I've heard. And so, but I mean, once you set this up for, I mean, you will want to set this up for proper controls. I mean, that's just the way it is. With that much aside, once you get to that, I was still having trouble. I was like, man, why do I keep sinking this sucker and losing guys? And what the bottom of the truth is, the strategies that I found out, at least early on, and you can do this for like the first couple levels, is like you can ignore most of the boat.
Yeah.
All right? And just concentrate on the chambers that are near the front where you're at. If you concentrate on those, you'll get across, I wouldn't say easily, but unless you screw up, you can get across okay.
Yeah.
But then the more advanced levels begin happening. And the more advanced levels are when the ship starts wavering. So there's and we didn't mention this, but in the main room that you start in, there are basically four chambers. Three of them have your extra men or men in them. One is a recharge chamber, and there's also a wheel.
A helm, yeah.
Yeah, and it's the ship's navigation wheel. And you have to use that to right the ship. One of the control points, one of the little gauges on your screen is a thing that tells you how close the center of your ship is. You don't want it veering off. Not good. I never had a problem at the first couple levels, but it started to happen after that.
Well, the game introduces concepts to you slowly.
Yeah.
The first level, all you're doing is patching holes. The second level, it starts throwing in the course correction.
And you've got to fix the engines on that level, too.
No. The third level.
That's what I'm talking about.
The third level starts adding in oil temperature.
Yeah.
And the tricky thing with the oil temperature is that's when you have to actually start caring about all of the boat instead of some of the boat.
That's it.
Because your helm is on one end of the boat and six screens the other way is the oil, is where you put in the oil to keep the engine from overheating.
Right. It's actually, listen, when this game starts off a little too hard. I think if I had the controls properly set up, it wouldn't have been as bad. It could have been easier on the first couple of screens, but they do a good job, I think, of ramping it up. Okay. I mean, these games were unforgiving back in the day. But this game, I've got to say, and we've played a lot of ZX games, so I have, you've played some. This is amongst my favorites.
Yeah, it's really
It's not the easiest, but like almost every aspect of it is well thought out. It's well planned and it's well executed. It's a tough game. I wish the robots had a little more power because that really makes it hard.
Yeah.
That's what really makes the game difficult is how quickly you go through your power. And you're going to learn as you play this because I sucked when I first started this game. But you're going to learn, when do I use Super Step? When do I not? What do I go for first? to get to these holes quicker. Which holes do I care about? You know, you'll learn that the game teaches you by beating you down. and then you will learn. When you finally get your boat across the ocean and to the dock, they unload your cargo. Now, your ship, you have to pay for repairs for the ship. You've got to pay for the travel across there. And you also, they take money out for how waterlogged your cargo is.
Yeah.
So if like you've let a lot of the cargo holds fill with water, you're going to lose money right there because that's money gone. And then they basically, you also, it's like 1,000 pounds for your robot you lost as well.
Yeah.
I read somewhere.
Restocking the ship.
I read somewhere, and I didn't try this. I read somewhere that you could actually go into negative numbers. Well, let me rephrase that. You could lose money to the point where you don't make any money on the first ship.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually, on the high score money chart, it goes back.
Loops around, yeah.
So you're back, and suddenly you have to actually have 990,000 pounds. I didn't try it, but I heard you could do that. I think the scoring is actually kind of, I could see sitting down and playing this as a high score game. It would be fun if you didn't cheat, because it would be a challenge to try to, because that would make you want to not lose cargo. Because when you're playing by yourself, you don't really care about the cargo. You just want to make it the first couple of times. You know, it might be a fun thing to do.
I think the game goes on. I mean, if you have a good game, I think the game goes on a little long if you're trying to do this in a high score challenge setting.
It like, might not go on too long. What did you think of this? Give us the Brent take.
Well, there's a couple things you haven't mentioned yet that are incredibly important. The water always leaks at the bottom of your boat.
Yeah.
So you've got six rooms on the upper level and six rooms at the bottom. Leaks always start at the bottom. But when they fill up, they will start going into the upper rooms. Now, I mentioned those doors earlier. You can actually seal the bulkheads so that a room won't overflow and start going through off the rest of your ship. So you can have, theoretically, a column of water in the middle of your ship, but the rest of your ship be dry because you've locked, closed the doors and kept them closed.
To my recollection, water will get through closed hatches eventually.
If it fills up all the way up.
Yeah. So it will get, and then you've got water on that top floor.
Here's the cool thing. So you've sealed up the bulkheads, right? And the water is on the second level of your ship. If you open that door, it properly spills through your entire ship.
Yeah.
It brings down the water level in that room and actually distributes it to all the other open rooms you have open. That is an attention to detail that, I love it.
I read that as a strategy, and I thought to myself, man, you've got to be well in when that's your last-ditch effort to get to open all the doors.
I very, very nice.
Yeah.
Very, very cool little detail there. This game was phenomenal. Phenomenal. It is an action arcade style game. I think the only places that it lets me down a little bit, and these are minor quabbles, putting a patch down on the holes can sometimes be a little finicky.
You have to learn that you drop that patch when you're right on top of the hole.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'll drop it too early. You're right. I wish they'd made it okay, close enough. Magnetic.
Yes.
Yeah. I agree.
When you're pumping, you have to actually tap the key, and there is a max speed your robot can actually go.
Yeah, it's so track and field, Brent.
So if you're tapping the thing just as fast as you can, that's not going to be the result you see on screen.
That makes sense, though, because you can't work a pump like you play track and field.
Well, I'm just, and that's not a complaint. That's more of just pointing out. Really, everything else about this, fantastic.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic.
I mean, it's a great game that I've never played anything like it, you know, in my life. And I'm telling you, when this came up, I was like, man, I got a bad feeling about this because those instructions make it look like it's going to be the hardest thing you ever did. It's not. It's actually quite a bit of fun. Yeah. And the great thing about it is here's a game. You know, this is the great thing about being a retro gamer and being like a great machine like the ZX. You could listen to this review. You can go over to internet.org and just play this game right now, perfectly fine, in your browser, runs great.
Yeah.
Now, a couple other caveats I should mention. When the instructions come up, it beeps every time it prints anything. And so it's the most irritating instruction screen. Also, this thing plays a couple ditties.
Yeah.
Not to be outdone. And it beeps those out, too.
And overall, the sound is fine. But yeah, the beeping text is
I will
not
say,
necessary.
I had played this with the sound off. Uh-uh. You got to have the sound on. You have to have the sound on. Yeah. I don't know what it was. It didn't work as well for me. A few things I want to touch on. And again, you may find a good control option, but I would reset those keys. A couple of things I thought were amusing about this. The ad campaign for this game that they had to change. I saw the ad, and they had to withdraw the ad. So the ad basically says, for added realism, play this standing in the bath.
Yeah, I saw that.
I said the UK's Advertising Standards Agency received complaints that this may encourage children to potentially cause their electronic computers to come in contact with water.
Yeah.
Considerable safety hazard. And they were ordered to withdraw the advert. I guess they ran it once. I did think that was... It's a good tagline, too. It's a real good tagline, Brent. So, I looked at the reviews for this thing as well to see how it did. And it did just pretty much like I thought it would. I mean, there were a couple I thought were dumb. CVG gave us a 93. I think this is by the way, in my opinion, A game. This is an A game.
Yeah, I agree. 100%.
Crash gave this a 91. This is a Crash Smash.
That's about where I'd put it.
Micro 7 gave this an 83. And then Sinclair User must have been out to lunch. They gave us a 70. Too low. Way too 70.
Yeah, there's.
You kidding me? Too good.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it actually gets more interesting as it goes.
Yeah.
You know, and there's actually, you could have done a sequel or something like this. I could think of a bunch of ways. I thought of a bunch of different interface things you could have done for this. You could have even done this like for example, you sort of mentioned this, like you got three robots on this thing. You're only using one robot. This is a bad idea, by the way. You need all these guys working nonstop. But you could even have done this almost like in a lemming style way.
No, you do it like Lost Viking style. You control three robots at the same time, but when you put them on a task, they just keep doing that task until you come back. So you could have one, you could set one up with a lever that just pumps all the time while you're controlling the other ones to do other stuff. That's how I would see a sequel to this game.
We should mention that the robots you drive around are called C-Bots.
Yeah.
Get it? C-Dag.
C-Bots.
Yeah. Also, the last line in the user manual, which amused me, don't forget, even worse things happen to software pirates.
Yeah.
And they get the dick.
Yeah.
I like it when they badmouth the pirates. Those stinking pirates, they've screwed us all. This game, we actually got some reviews on this one, Brent. Let me roll over here. We actually got a couple reviews.
Oh, and that's good because more people need to play this game.
I agree. I absolutely agree. So Jed Byrne writes, this is an interesting game. Not fun, not exactly fun, but interesting. It's basically Tapper, but spread across multiple screens. Instead of thirsty patrons, you have holes filled with water. Instead of serving drinks, you're pumping out the water. That's a weird comparison. I never would have thought of that. There are added complications, but don't add anything to the gameplay. It just overloads a simple, addictive game so that it stops being fun. It's even more interesting because this 1984 game sits on the cusp between the Spectrum's early arcade knockoffs and its more sophisticated games that would follow. Early irritations remain, like the inability to redefine keys and an annoying tune when you die. Yeah.
The tune.
Later sophistication, like multiple screens across levels, have been introduced, but sadly, it doesn't quite come together. This is a shame, because you can see what they were trying to do. At the time, it must have felt like an exciting, logical first step. It was praised for originality, given a 10 out of 10 for playability by CNVG, and awarded a Crash Smash. The benefit is hindsight. It looks more like a misstep. A basic game mechanic stretched too far. Given the choice between this and Tapper, I chose the latter. A better game happens in Tapper. That was Jed Byrne. So Jed Byrne, not as down with the clouds we are. We also got a little note here from our good buddy Pajaka, who chimes in. Okay, so first red flag. You are greeted with a wall of instructions text that has you wondering just what the heck you are about to play. But actually, it's quite a simple and neat concept that seems fun for a short time. Then the leaks start, all heck breaks loose, and before you know it, you have lost the game. The main flaw of this game is the robot's energy system. It drains too quickly, So you are constantly backtracking to recharge. And in the meantime, your ship is filling with water. Water also causes your robot to lose energy faster. And in a lot of game, and a lot in the game. So it basically saying it loses energy quickly.
Yeah, if the water is above your robot's head, he loses power faster.
It is obvious you won't make it across the room with water. So it's quicker just to die and respawn back at the bridge. I would never do that. And this is one of those games where you know you can't win, but you have to keep playing it out regardless. Graphics and sound for a specy game are pretty good, though, and it plays okay despite the flaws. It comes from an era where developers are still trying new things, but finding their feet a little. And there's seeds of a good game here, but its current state is unbalanced and ends up being frustrating more than it is fun. 6 out of 10. So we like this more than both those fellas did.
I think a lot. Now,
I'm going to speculate too. So go ahead.
I could be very off.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling that the more you play this game, the greater appreciation you have for it. Because when you first start playing, it is frustrating. It's overly frustrating when you very first start out. But I felt myself getting better, and I love that about games. I love when that happens with games. And I never, I think the max I got was like trip 4.
I did not get past the third trip. I watched it, but I didn't get to do it.
I completed the first oil fill up,
yeah,
and then died after that.
Yeah. I'm going to sort of parrot you there. I think this, I'm telling you, when I first played this game, I saw that wall of text, and it is intimidating, but this game is better than I think people think. This is one, you get better at it when you play it. This is another one of those ones that you can see why this was popular and well-received back when it came out, because games were harder. People only got a game a week or a game a month. They wanted to sit down and have some challenge to it. And this is a game where the challenge is actually, you can actually get better at this.
Yeah.
And it gives you room to try different strategies, which I love that. It gives you room to try different approaches to how you're going to try to make money, last long. What am I going to do here? And I think they pulled this game off. I think this is a complete win.
Yeah.
Complete win.
Yeah.
This goes in my best games of the year and right in my brain pan for a couple of weeks when we talk about that stuff. I think this is one of the best.
Oh, absolutely.
And this is one of the best ZX games we've played.
Best ZX game. Yeah. I agree.
So let's talk about, let's talk about what we're doing on the next R. Sinclair, Brent. The next R. Sinclair, the people have spoken, the Brent. And man, here's what I have never heard of in my whole life. But the next game we're going to be playing is called Strange Loop. And I had to say it. So that'll be fun. And that'll be next year.
When
we get back to that. So let's talk about our schedule for the remainder of December, Brent. Next week, we will be dipping our toe into the Christmas side of the TRSA Color Computer. We'll be playing the Coco Show. It's our Christmas edition of the Coco Show.
In fact, for the rest of December, it's Christmas time.
So here's our schedule. Next week is the 10th. That will be our Coco Show Christmas Spectacular. The week after that, we will do our Atari ST Christmas Spectacular. Then we'll do an ARG Presents Christmas Show. And then finally, to end the year, on New Year's Eve, Brent, we'll be doing all of our shows in a year-end wrap-up, our favorite games of the year, our least favorite games of the year, our popular episodes, our most popular, least popular episodes, all that stuff, that'll be on New Year's Eve. So remember, we've got a show on New Year's Eve. This is taped live. We've got a show on Christmas Eve taped live. And then we've got the next couple shows. It should be a lot of fun. We're going all the way across the board here. We wanted to get everything in December, so we sort of rearranged stuff to make it a little more fun. I like it because when me and Brent were tasked with taking over some of these shows and getting together, it gave us a little more actual flexibility than we had before to kind of do stuff like this. So it's been a lot of fun. A couple of things I want to get in here, Brent. I want to thank Happy Coding and his crew for providing us with a little Christmas ditty at the beginning of this episode. I'm going to put a link in the description below for you to check out Happy and his gang's wares. They've got a lot of good stuff over there for the ZX Spectrum. And we love Happy, real good guy and a real contributor to the scene. I don't know if you saw this, Brent. This is more ARG Presents centric than it is R. Sinclair, but I'm going to mention it anyway because I don't want to forget it. Buck Owens has went through and did a complete list of every show we ever did for ARG Presents with both the games and the opening baloney. Everything.
Yeah.
It's
amazing.
A list that only a madman would put together. I'm going to try to release this to the people in some way.
Well, I'm already on that.
Okay, so good. So hopefully by the time we get to ARG, we'll have something for you in that arena. We want to thank everybody for hanging and banging with us last week on the Thanksgiving Marathon, don't we, Brent?
Absolutely.
Talk about that for a bit.
Yeah, we went for 8 hours last week, played a slew of games covering a slew of topics at a slew of machines, and it was a good time. We fought very little,
yeah,
but also a lot.
I like this. We didn't know when the stream was going to end, but I know now. Whenever the Brent gets hungry, it's over.
Brent want food now.
Brent, the second Brent got hungry, we're out the door. Surprisingly smoothly, except for the C64, we did pretty good.
Yeah, and you can go back and check that out. It is actually up now in the live section.
Something else I couldn't believe. Oh, by the way, as an added amusing bonus, that was an 8 hour and X amount of minutes show.
Yeah.
There were two sections in the show, a 12 second section and a 14 second section that had, there were when we played PlayStation Star Wars that got us flagged for 12 and 14 seconds of Star Wars music, which demonetized the video and banned the video in Russia. So I apologize, they weren't in Russia. And it wouldn't let me edit them because the show was too long. So there you go.
Obviously. People were digging through that video just to listen to the Star Wars music.
Yeah, for the 12 and 14 separate things. By the way, this is the last time we're covering Star Wars. Meh. Bunch of greedy bums. That's all I got, though, Brent. You got anything else?
No, I think everything else, Aaron, we can save until next week.
Great. So, until our next R. Sinclair, all I can tell you is, rewind tape
and press play.
Bam.
R. Sinclair is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Patreon supporters help choose the games we play, receive exclusive magnets, and get access to the Amigos Retro Gaming Discord server. Visit patreon.com/R. Sinclair if you'd like to support the show and join our community.